Welcome to Fully Vetted, animal care news from the clinic to the farm, presented by the Ohio Veterinary Medical Association. And here is your host, Mia Cunningham, and producer, Kristen Bennett.
All right, well, we're back and we are continuing our conversation with Dr. Mia Carey, and she's going to talk to us about diversity in the practice.
Thank you so much for having me back again. It's wonderful to be here and talking about this very challenging but important topic.
As a profession, again, Dr. Carey, as we're grappling with this issue of race and diversity and inclusion, let's talk about the stats. Do you know the latest stats on the percentage of Black DVMs that are currently practicing in the United States?
Yes, we could definitely talk about the statistics that are relevant today. However, I want to first take us back a little bit because this is interesting background. So between 1889 and 1948, 70 Black students, 70, graduated from U.S. and Canadian veterinary schools. And then when Tuskegee University, a historically Black college, added a veterinary school in 1945, we started to see those numbers increase, which was awesome. But here we are in 2020, and Black Americans remain incredibly underrepresented in vet medicine, and actually never in the history have Black Americans comprised more than 3% of the profession at any point in time. And we've seen it, you know, obviously dip down to 0, 1, 2, 3, and then it goes back down depending on the year and the data. But there's really excellent data from the AVMA, from AAVMC, and then that's often compared against U.S. Census data because the context is important too, right? So you could say that number and realize, okay, we are one of, if not the whitest professions in the U.S., but what does that mean in terms of context with the U.S. population? So as an example, white people, 60% in the U.S. is the current number in terms of people that are white. And in veterinary medicine, it's 86%. If we look at Hispanic or Latino, it's 18% in the U.S. and 5% in veterinary medicine. And the most current data that I've seen, 13% of the population in the U.S. are Black. And at this particular data point, it was only 2% Black in veterinary medicine. So I think it's important to think of the numbers, not only in terms of the raw numbers, but then in the context for, goodness, what it could be if we mirrored the population that's actually out there.
So in your opinion, why is veterinary medicine the least diverse profession in the United States?
What I often hear, but we can't let fly, is, oh, well, the numbers are what they are because we just can't find them. And I just think that's not true, right? The whole idea of seek and you shall find, if in terms of our recruiting, we went back to identify in high school and middle school when those emotional decisions are being made for career choice. And you see veterinary schools doing this now. They just didn't historically do it. And Dean Willie Reed does such a great job of this at Purdue. He actually loads up all of his veterinary students that are Black and goes out into the community and says, all right, let's represent. And that's such a great way to go about it. And we see more and more universities doing that. And so to say, well, we can't find them, that doesn't fly. What I actually think more likely is representation, right? If it's a field that young Black children don't even consider because they've never seen themselves in it, then it's not even on their radar. So that's why representation is so important. And then also, as we talked about in our last episode, there are unconscious biases because you might not look a certain way, act a certain way, or speak a certain way. Sometimes those opportunities, because of unconscious or implicit biases, might be part of the decision-making that didn't allow those opportunities to occur for the Black person that might be considering veterinary medicine as a career. So I think those are some of the reasons. It's obviously there's a lot of layers there, but because of that, there's some ways that the profession is currently, and it's happening now, are addressing it so that it won't look the same 10 years from now.
So on a macro scale, what can leaders in the veterinary community do to change this culture, either at the state or national level?
So this is obviously a huge responsibility, and there is a lot there. I would say the most important thing that a leader can do is to recognize that the number one priority of their organization, regardless of what it is, should now be diversity, equity, and inclusion. No matter what else they wrote in their strategic plan for 2020 and beyond, if that's not in there as a top priority, then you rewrite your strategic plan. It does start with looking inward first. So even if you're, you know, the president of your state association and you want to make diversity, equity, and inclusion your priority, and you're going to bring your organization with you, if you're not at home doing the work, watching the videos, reading the books, then you're not going to be as educated as you might be yourself in order to have those conversations and to build your confidence to have them. It's everyday leadership, right? So you asked about leaders within the veterinary community. Well, guess what? We are all leaders. Regardless of our role or our title, we have that ability to, one, do the self-work, and then to demand the change in the organizations that we are a part of. As terms of that leadership role, it's also making space for the tough conversations, right? So if you are the leader and you're working on your agenda for your next board meeting, put this on the agenda. Make the space for it. And again, get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that is inviting in these conversations. And you don't have to have all the answers. You may be the president of your association. You're thinking, oh, this all sounds great, but I have no idea what to do. I have so much to learn myself. That's okay. Do your learning, continue on your pathway, and also bring the conversation into your organization, your community, your practice, whatever it is that you're representing as a leader. And then I would also say, again, it comes back to speaking up and amplifying voices. So if you are a leader at any level of organized medicine, using that power for good, right? Using the power for good, like superheroes, we're all superheroes. But speaking up when you see inappropriate words of action and amplifying the voices that aren't yet at the table. And one more thing on this that I think is really important is all of the data on combating racism shows there's really two places that we can have the most impact. One is what we've already talked about on the individual level, and the other is on the institutional level. What we aren't going to have an impact is trying to convince one-on-one other people that they're wrong. That is wasted effort, wasted energy, and candidly, it's not our jobs. But if we are part of, as an example, organized medicine as an institution, boy, if we can change the policies within that institution, that's how we're going to affect systemic change.
To your point too, you know, if someone's uncomfortable operating in that space or presenting those suggestions to a board, what do you think about bringing in facilitators to come in, you know, have those conversations? How beneficial do you think that would be?
Absolutely. And I think that's true of almost any topic, right? If there's a topic that you want to introduce in your practice or your workplace and you don't feel qualified or confident to do it yourself, then bring in someone that can facilitate the conversation. Even if you are comfortable, if you want to bring someone in, so instead of you facilitating, you can be part of the conversation and brainstorm and take off that leader hat, if you will, that can be a powerful way to let you as the leader of that group be part of the conversation. If you're listening to this, you're like, oh, I'm not quite ready for that yet. Just make sure you start. Start somewhere.
Awesome. And you touched a little bit on this, but just like what practice leadership can do and, you know, some of the first steps that they can take in terms of implementing change.
If you're not where you want to be yet on that continuum, nor is your veterinary practice in this setting, maybe think about, well, what could we do just in terms of acknowledging that there actually are differences amongst us? And to some of you, this example is going to sound extremely basic. To some of you, it's going to sound like a great way to start. And again, it's going to be just depending on where you are on that continuum. But if you are currently, as a veterinary practice, not recognizing all the different ways that we can honor and celebrate each other, such as, what do you do in February for Black History Month? Do you highlight Black veterinary professionals on the practice and on your social media channels? You know, if you don't do that yet, what a great place to start. And it's going to create dialogue amongst your team members. In the fall, you start planning for Asian Pacific American Heritage Month that'll be coming up in May. You know, are you gathering facts that you can then share on your social media? That's a great way to, one, activate and help increase awareness that there actually are Asian Pacific American veterinary professionals, and you're going to create conversation just naturally by bringing it up within your practice. Same thing in June, LGBTQ+ Pride Month. Focus on the history of that. Where did that come from? And educate yourself and educate your practice. And it's fun, right? I'm like, who doesn't want to celebrate with colors and fun? And then create something that is an external example of how and why you celebrate Pride Month. Just as one example, by having a rainbow flag, it's going to create a more inclusive and safe environment for your clients as well. And so in some ways, it seems like, well, celebrating holidays, that doesn't seem like a big step. But guess what it is? If you're not doing that now, one, it helps with teamwork. It's going to create conversations that maybe you haven't had yet. And it's a great first step in really moving your practice forward.
Everybody likes to celebrate.
Right, absolutely. And in terms of bringing in a facilitator, that's such a good recommendation, and relying on other resources, right? So there's, oh my gosh, Procter & Gamble just put up two, I think, 3-minute videos. One is called The Look and one is called The Talk to support anti-racism. Show one of those videos and then talk about it. You know, what do you think about that? In that video, you know, which character were you? And it's a great way to use an external resource that's already there and then just talk about it. Just talk about it. So again, lots of resources like that out there that can help you have those conversations.
Most organizations, both in and outside of veterinary medicine, have or should have an employee handbook that outlines standard operating procedures and govern employee conduct. How should a veterinary practice incorporate diversity and inclusion?
So maybe it's because I'm such a weirdo. I'm like, oh, but this could be so much fun because there are tools out there that would allow practices so they don't have to create it all on their own, right? And I am a part of a couple different organizations that we all felt the same way at first. When we're like, okay, we are so far behind in the diversity, equity, inclusion. Where are we going to start? And then we found a beautiful resource that if you guys do not know about it, I highly encourage that you go there and use this tool. And it's the AABMC's organizational assessment tool. And Lisa Greenhill and the others at AABMC have done the work for us, at least to get us started. We have to take it to the next step. And I've also created that as a Google spreadsheet that you can download and then customize the heck out of it so it's relevant to your practice. And it has three different tabs. One is for the organization, so you can customize that for your practice. The second is for conferences. And in a practice, you could customize that for meetings. As an example, one of the questions is diversity, equity, inclusion tied to our mission and vision? Now, some of you are thinking, oh, mission and vision. I got to get me one of those, right? And it's okay. Not all practices yet have a mission or a vision statement, and that's okay. But because you can ask yourself that, and maybe you don't yet have one, but it's a great place to start. Okay, well, we need to work together to create a mission and a vision statement. And personally, I like purpose statements even more, but something that really defines your practice. If you don't have one, well, then you're starting raw, which is great. You can create it whatever you want it to be. If you do have a mission statement and diversity, equity, inclusion isn't tied into it, well, there you go. There's your very first step that you can take. And so you can use this assessment tool and you really start with just the assessment. Put a check mark for what am I doing? What is already implemented and I'm golden on? What is not in place at all? And what's maybe in progress? So you use the tool to assess, in this case, your veterinary practice and do it with your team, right? This isn't something that you have to do in isolation. And then you can think about, okay, well, I'm seeing a lot of red in this area. Maybe that's a really good place to start. Or maybe it's in the place where we've talked about implementing, but we actually haven't done it yet. Let's start there. And it provides such a great framework and a structure so that it's not starting from scratch. And I've used this now in two organizations recently, like this month. One is Vet Partners. I'm part of a diversity, equity, inclusion SIG, and we're using that to help Vet Partners really figure out where we are and where we want to start. And people are surprised when I tell them this, but Pride VMC is using this tool. And most people are like, well, wait, Pride VMC, you know, you're an affinity organization. You guys are there. No, we're not. We look through this. We don't have diversity, equity, inclusion in our mission and vision. And so we're revamping that. It's very focused on LGBTQ+, right? It's like we have all the check marks there, but are we being holistic in our approach? So there's room for all of us to work and grow, and we don't have to start from scratch. It doesn't have to be so scary. There are awesome tools out there for us that we can use and customize for our own workplaces.
So let's say we've got a doctor who's got their bright and shiny new handbook that does include some considerations for DEI, but they've got some staffers that are hesitant to adhere to the new policies or just might outright refuse to honor them. So what suggestions would you have for a doctor that might find themselves in that position?
Right. So my recommendation is, first of all, work with them, work with that situation as you would any other performance issue, right? So first of all, it's on you. Have you set out clear expectations? Because you may not have. You may have been thinking if you've done all this work in the DEI space and you're all on board, but have you really clearly communicated that with your team? Do you have written policies that can be referred to? So make sure the expectations are clear. And then you have to confirm that they understand the expectations and you provide the education, you provide the training, you reinforce it. So you have to go through those steps. And I would say in most situations right now, it's probably those steps that need to be taken first. But if you go through all of those steps and you see that the employee continues not to meet that expectation, then you got to be bold. And that potentially you need to fire them. Now, there's a long runway between where we started this question into, oh, fire them, right? There's a lot of things that can happen between there. more than likely that person just needs to have some training, some education, have the space to grow and evolve, because this is a very complex topic. But there's going to be a point where if you've done all of your work and as a leader, you really have gone through all the steps, and if they still choose not to deliver on the expectation that you expect for your practice, then you have to let them go.
So we've talked about how to handle racism from a manager to employee perspective, but let's say you encounter an instance of racism as an employee. How do you handle that, both on the peer-to-peer level as well as with clients?
Yeah, it's such an important part to work on as a practice. And I think it's through practice. It's important for a practice, and it involves practice. And that is, you know, taking time in your staff meetings to talk about it, right? And so it involves training and education. And in a former life as head of sales training, I realized we couldn't use role play because that's in itself stigmatizing. It's like, what, we're going to role play? I am done, head in the sand. But if you practice and you create scenarios where you're like, okay, well, if a client walks in and says this, how are we going to handle it? And make it a conversation around it. Practice is the best way to prepare yourselves and your team members so that when it does happen, one, that they recognize it, and two, they're confident in actually acting upon it. And that's why I mention this a lot, but it's so important. If you have a DE&I policy that's actually on the wall, that allows your staff member to literally not have the burden on them to figure out what to say. They can just point to the wall. You know, this is our policy, and what you just said is against that policy, and it's not acceptable here. Now, if it's someone that's not quite there in their confidence or in their training, then they need to know who to go to. If they hear something and their eyes are big and like, okay, this is wrong, but I'm not ready to deal with it, who do they go to? And that's what you talk about in those practice sessions. You know, when you're ready as an individual to manage it yourself, rock on. You're empowered to do so. If you're not yet, here are the people to go to and bring us into the conversation, and we're going to help. Because in this practice, no one is ever alone. We're in it together. We're a team. And so those are some of the things that can make such a world of difference in terms of creating that culture for the practice that will not tolerate those things that should not be tolerated.
So are you suggesting that you fire a client?
Absolutely. And that's something that, you know, we do, I wouldn't say routinely. It's not like every day we're firing tens of, you know, thousands of clients, but we can all point to the situations where we have had to fire a client from, you know, they're not paying their bills. Or a really common one, almost any vet you ask, if you say, would you fire a client that was abusive to your staff? Yes. Yes, I would, because that, I will not tolerate that. My staff are my family. Perfect. So this is a perfect example where there is likely abuse happening to the staff, because if someone is making racist, discriminatory, offensive comments, then that's abusive to your staff. But we're not all there yet, right? We see it as two separate issues. But once we start to realize that, then it becomes much easier. And I was like, oh, wait a minute, we're there. This is the client that needs to be fired, and when we understand why and we feel okay with it. But it takes work. It takes work and practice to get there. But you're absolutely right. There's some times that if the client won't change their behaviors, we have to be willing to let them go.
And so just to kind of like maybe an add-on to that thought, I'm curious what you think about social media. You know, we live in such a cancel culture, mm-hmm. and having those interactions in the practice or in the clinic is one thing. But when people take the fight online, do you have any recommendations for how office manager or, you know, an owner can kind of combat some of those things if they're being assailed online?
Yeah, so I am definitely not a social media expert. However, I am a social media hobbyist. I tell this to all my friends. I'm there and I enjoy the space, but there are brilliant resources out there for, and I'm going to mention one, but there's a lot. So Dr. Caitlin DeWild, her company is The Social DBM. I actually just brought her into a Pride BMC social media working group to help us grow. So one, I would say tap into experts that are out there. And typically what the experts are saying is don't engage that, because if you engage with it, you're just going to fuel it and it's going to continue forever. But I will also say it's very situational. So depending on what the remark is, how it's communicated, it may be different than how you would handle a different one. So I'm not comfortable just having a gross statement. But I would say, one, be out there and be aware of what's being said. And then depending on the situation, it may be that you address it offline with that individual and not in the public space. It may be that you just don't even address it because you're fueling the fire. However, if it's offensive towards a staff member or your practice in a certain way that you know is being racist, well, then that's a different situation. And that's where you want to get one-on-one, if it is a current client, and have that conversation with them. But again, I can't speak loud enough of the benefit of experts. And there are so many wonderful social media experts that if you find yourself in a situation, or if you want to proactively be prepared, tap into those experts. And it doesn't have to be an ongoing thing. It could be that you just bring an expert for a couple consultations to really help you beef up your, as this example, social media policy. So when it happens, you're prepared.
And add that to the employee handbook.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, as we wrap up here, one more big question for you. So at this point, we know that there's a big problem in the veterinary profession and the world as a whole when it comes to diversity. So big, in fact, that it quickly becomes overwhelming when you think about everything that needs to happen to undo centuries of systemic racism. Inevitably, some people are going to think that things are fine, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. The status quo is always easier. What is the danger in that perspective?
So the danger, first of all, I will say is very, very high. And that danger is of no longer being relevant. That's it. In a nutshell, it's no longer being relevant. Our clientele is becoming more diverse. Their expectations are changing. And if we aren't ready, if we aren't prepared to meet their expectations and meet their needs, if we aren't more inclusive in our services, in our offerings, and how we communicate, then we will very quickly become irrelevant. And that's why we have to matter. And that's why we have to make change and realize it may be hard, but it's doable. And there's tools and there's resources and there's people out there willing to help. But if you want to stay relevant, you're going to have to make the change.
Well said.
Thank you.
Thank you. I mean, I, for one, feel my anxiety level relieved, like it's being lifted off of me.
Good.
You know, again, I think your energy, your openness, it makes the conversations more palatable and one that I think will resonate well. So I just can't express enough my gratitude. So thank you.
Yes. And thank you for helping us get to this point where not only helping our listeners, but ourselves as well.
I'm glad I could be with you on this part of the journey.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good rest of your day.
Well, that was an intense conversation, Mia. What do you think?
I feel like I learned a lot, to be honest.
Yeah, me too. When you start wondering how you, as just one person, can make any measurable difference in such a huge problem, it becomes overwhelming and it's easy to just quit before you even start. And the way she breaks it down makes it less overwhelming. You know, you don't have to go out today and start a rally or go to a protest.
And that's powerful because I think even for myself, like I get stunted sometimes when I think about what I want to take on because I think it's got to be this grand gesture. Like if you just want to sit and read for 30 minutes, like that's a form of self-education. And I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
I do hope people feel encouraged to start delving into, you know, research and figuring out where they are on the spectrum because she doesn't make it seem daunting.
Yeah, I do too, especially because we've got one more segment with Dr. Carey coming up in our DEI series. On the next episode, we're going to chat with her about how to handle conversations about racism and discrimination within our social and familial groups.
Until next time, stay safe and be well.
The Ohio Veterinary Medical Association is always seeking ways to enrich your member experience. To access resources mentioned in this episode, share your feedback and suggestions, and send us an email or voice message, please visit www.fullyvettedpodcast.com. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you prefer to listen so you never miss an episode. I'm Kristen Bennett, and on behalf of the OVMA, thanks for listening to Fully Vetted. We'll see you next time.